Hey everybody, it's Mark Patterson back with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And before we get into today's wonderful guest, I want to let you know about my brand new website, www.markpattersonnfl.com. It highlights my speaking, my book, my event that's coming up, my consulting, a bunch of things I've been doing and I look forward to doing in the future. Speaking of the book, also called Finding Your Summit, that will be out. Well, it's actually coming. It's about to be ready to be launched right about now when you will hear this episode. You can get that book on Amazon. It documents my epic climb up Mount Everest, all the other seven summits, the Matterhorn, the Eiger, a bunch of other epic peaks, as well as my time playing in the NFL and the struggles I've had. It's not all about peaks. It's also about valleys and how we climb our way out of those. If anybody wants me to come out and do a keynote, let me know. Go to my website. You can contact me there. And you're going to get a free What's Your Everest PDF playbook on how to accomplish things. All right. Let's go. My guest today is an adventurer like myself. He's got a bunch of cool things. He's got a film. It's actually more of a docuseries we're going to get into. He's an award-winning filmmaker. Kevin DeVries, how are you doing?
Good, good, man. Sign me up for your all your stuff.
There's a lot of things going on, man, all at
Yeah,
one
good
time.
Stuff.
Yeah, but that's all been kind of the DNA of what I've been doing over a number of these years, including running Sports Illustrated. But let's talk about you. So you've got this adventure bug, and one of the things that's really cool about you and what you've been doing, I'm very much aligned with a lot of the common interests that you have. You've got this kind of tagline around faith, adventure, and storytelling. So let's just reset this thing for a minute before we go into this current project that you're trying to do. And let's get into like the curiosity bug of how you even started doing this and where this came from.
Yeah, I mean, the first time it happened was Rainier back in 19, actually 2000, summer of 2000. I just went through a divorce and you've been there. Your head just kind of leaves your body for a while. And so Michigan's pretty flat. I've done all the Great Lakes, kayaked, ran marathons, all that stuff. It's like, you know, what would it look like if we just climbed a mountain, grabbed a bunch of Flatlander buddies? I was the only one that made it up on the summit with a bunch of strangers, but I was hooked. And there was just something transcendent about that experience, you know, catching the sunrise at the summit. It was just surreal, right? It's transcendent. And there's not a lot in life that gives you those moments, but that certainly was one of those moments. So I was hooked, started doing some research on the seven summits, you know, and then the Explorer's Grand Slam. So you've gone all the way. I mean, you've rounded all the bases. You've done the seven summits. I'm kind of stuck at five and also skied to the North Pole. So it's a 9-point objective because you also skied to the South Pole. But hopefully that'll happen with the series that we have coming up. But at the time, you know, I was younger. I was in a just dealing with a truckload of trauma and pain. And after a while, after doing more of these climbs and going all over the world, I just began to connect kind of the dots. You know, it's like most of your life is collecting dots, but they're not really connecting. And as time went on, as the years progressed, I began to realize, man, there's a lot of people that I'm doing these extreme adventures with that are kind of in the same phase of life that I am. Something happened, they're running away from something, childhood trauma, current chaos, whatever it was. And to the person, none of us are really afraid of dying. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing what we were doing, right? You wouldn't climb Everest if you were just like, oh my gosh, I think it'd kill me. You were more like, okay, that's true. That's part of the package, but the other part of the package is it could be climbed. And so, you know, you did it. You did it with some great people and some mutual friends. But I began to think, you know, I think something else is going on here, and I want to get under the hood because the what, where, and how, and all that stuff is what kind of, you know, really dominates the adventure narrative. But I wanted to get into the why, like what's the mechanism, what's the engine behind that? And what I discovered for me personally, I can't speak for all people, but is that all of us that were doing these extreme adventures were not really afraid of dying. Otherwise we wouldn't do it. I think a lot of it was, we're just afraid of life, you know? And so we were trying to grasp this idea of risk, and that risk is not about escaping life. It's about keeping life from escaping you. So, you know, it kind of fit some of that narrative of, it wasn't so much of what I was looking for. It's maybe something that I needed to find that I had left behind. So that began the whole uncovering of, okay, what's happening here? And then I began to discover that if you can't get out of your head, which is where a lot of the trauma lives, and get into your heart, which is where the Greeks call that the captain of the soul, right? The captain of our being is actually the heart. It's where the passion lives. It's where our dreams live. It's where our aspirations live. If you can't do that 17-inch journey, 18-inch journey, then you have to climb 18,000 feet. You have to go 18,000 miles, because whatever we can't internalize, we always externalize. So that was a pretty sobering discovery. And it's kind of like all the great explorers, they always say the same thing. The thing that you're looking for is really not the thing, right? The summit that you're looking for is really not the thing. Yes, it is a physical achievement, but there's something deeper, a deeper narrative in it. And oftentimes it's the things that you discover while you're searching for something else that really brings value to it. And you found that, I'm sure, on Everest, all the self-discovery that happened, the healing, the epiphanies. So that kind of began the journey. It started out very physical because I just needed to get out of my head. It was like an atomic bomb blew up in my life. And I was like, man, I got to get into the mountains. I got to transcend this. I got to physically somehow get on top of this thing. And then it began more of a metaphoric journey.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about is the process. And actually, long before I got to Mount Everest, it started off with Kilimanjaro. I've been down there a couple of times. I traveled to a foreign country down in Tanzania and took that on. And like I said, I've done that twice, and I've been on Denali twice. And I thought that there'd be, there's seven summits over 7 years, and those years turn to be 10 years, not 7 years. And there's COVID that gets in there, and there's being turned back by minus 90 degree temps up on Denali in Alaska, and things like that. You also had another traumatic experience. So what I want to do is kind of stack these things up, where you've got, we're talking about the valleys, not the peaks right now, but what kind of drove you into this? And you talked about before going through a tough relationship-wise, of being divorced, and I've been through that, and it was awful. And that's actually how I found the Seven Summits, right? I needed something, a massive goal, to pull myself out as
There you
something that
go.
I didn't even think was necessarily achievable, to then really give me that drive. And where your focus goes, your energy always follows. So with a new massive goal, rather than think about the divorce and it's awful and what am I going to do, it's now, how the hell am I going to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, which was, and how am I going to do with this whole thing? What's the path? I think you were clinically dead, literally, for 5 minutes. I want to go back and ask you what that was all about.
Yeah, so it was actually the way we recalculated, because we have the medical records, we have the time when the 9/11 call came. It was probably closer to 15 minutes, which is really the edge of the unknown. I mean, that's pretty much where brain activity starts to cease to exist. So yeah, I was just out on a normal run, and was training for a half marathon. And it was in September 21st, same day decades earlier that my maternal grandfather had passed away from a heart issue as well. And yeah, I don't know. It was just one of those things where I think the veil between time and eternity was kind of shredded a bit. I think that kind of opened up, because I had some experiences with being clinically dead for 15 minutes that you can only describe in supernatural terms. There's just no natural words for them. The out-of-body experience, and this is not. It's normal, actually. I mean, if you read, there's thousands of accounts that you can read now. It's almost a cottage industry of near-death experiences, but everybody kind of comes to the same conclusion. It's like, yeah, I floated up out of my body. Some people see their whole life go in front of them. And in like a nanosecond, you're seeing the entire existence of your time-space continuum existence right there in front of you. I believe I had a divine encounter. I believe it was the risen Christ. And I believe that he sent me back. And he just said kind of the same thing that is said to a lot of people that come out of these experiences, which are very pronounced and life-altering. He just said, "Hey, look, your mission is not complete. Your time has not yet come." And then you come to, and you're in an ambulance, and they've got an oxygen mask on you, and they've got the thumper on top of you in case they have to thump you again. And I talked to the ambulance driver, and it sent shivers up my spine. Months later, when we had a celebration service, I was like, "Oh, there's three or four of us you're celebrating, that you saved. Is that the people you saved this month?" And he's like, "No, this is the whole year. 96% of the time, when people have a cardiac arrest, it's all electrical. You drop dead. You know it as an athlete. You've seen NFL players have that happen. Just boom, they're done. Unless you get a deep, a shock on them, they're not going to come back with CPR. It's not like a heart attack where it's a plumbing issue. It's pure electrical. You can't drive to the hospital with a cardiac arrest. You just simply drop dead." And that's what I did. But he said something that was so profound. I says, "What was it like for you then? Because you hardly ever find us alive." And he's like, "Yeah, it was kind of weird." He said, "Both my co-driver and I, we both talked afterwards." And these are his words, not mine. And I don't know where he is spiritually, but he said this. He said, "It was obvious to us that you were straddling two dimensions. Like you went somewhere, and part of that dust of that atmosphere is still on you. And but you're here, but you're also there, and you're straddling it." And it took me probably 48 hours to get out of my astronaut suit, and actually be able to cognitively understand what was going on, because my questions, my sister said I asked the same question like 50 times, and they would answer, but I couldn't cognitively, I was oxygen starved. It's like high altitude, right? You just get hypoxic. You're not yourself. You're not thinking well. And so, yeah, it was powerful. It's hard to come back from these experiences because you kind of see that a lot of what we think is important in life is really not that important. And then you start thinking about, okay, what's afterlife and what does that look like? And that lend itself to some of the series that we're going to be tackling with this whole third man phenomena that people like us experience on high altitude expeditions, or survivors, or 9/11 tower survivors. They talk about another experience, an otherworldly experience that guides them. And I certainly had that.
Yeah, incredible. And what a miracle it is that you're back here talking with us today. And we're going to get into kind of the meat. I do want to relay one experience because although I did not have a heart attack and I did not like leave my body type of thing, when I was just, this is on Mount Everest, just below the balcony, which is about 27,500 feet, I was at my end. I was at my edge. I'd already been snow blind. I was out of oxygen, hadn't eaten in 3 days. It was just everything I could do just to get down to high camp, which was 26,500 feet. And I could see it down below. It was just a matter of trying to reach it. And so many people have had their, end journey, including my tent mate from 2019 down in Antarctica, who's still up on the Hillary step, who I stepped over. But the bottom line is I was sitting there trying to figure out how I was going to get down, and I was literally the last guy off the top of Mount Everest. And there was a Russian guy who I believe now was an angel that came from behind me, and he gave me encouragement. I told him to stop the Sherpa that was 200 yards on the mountain, just trying to get back to high camp, left me behind. That was carrying my oxygen tank, right? And that's what I needed. So, anyways, it doesn't compare to your story, but it was it, looking back on it now, there's no other conclusion that I could come up with. I either imagined this or was an angel. I don't know, but it was real for me in that moment, and that's what helped me get off that mountain. I want to get into the kind of meat and the juice of what this is all about, because I think, these life experiences for all of us, there's a reason and why that you decided to go take on Mount Rainier and not just do a bunch of flat land stuff. Like you said, 10Ks and marathons and things like that. You took on Mount Rainier. I've been up that a couple different times. And it is a tough, challenging, it's only 3 days. Roughly, you can do it in less than that, but it's not an easy thing just to get up and get back down. There's some technicalities to it around that. So you started into this film project. I want to get more into the meat and bones of this because we only have 20 or so more minutes. It's called The Journey Within. And so what you're trying to do right now, and I'm so fascinated by so much of what you're talking about here. You're trying to cut this thing up into essentially this docuseries, this four part, with some just the most amazing journeys that have ever taken place over time. You talk about Everest Base Camp. Obviously, I lived up there for two and a half months back in 1926 is when Mallory originally tried to go up there, and what we know today is that he died. We don't know if he made it to the top or where, but he fell off. South Georgia, this is famous for where Shackleton, one of the greatest stories
The
of
boss.
resilience and grit, got stuck going over to Antarctica, and then the boat got frozen in the ice, and everybody had to go off. And ultimately, he rose up, ends up rowing back against the Drake Passage, which is just insane to think about. But he made it to South Georgia, and then having to climb over the mountains, and not high tech Salomon or North Face gear, right? They're just going whatever they have, the South Pole trek and things like that. So let's get into this, like. What is the whole idea? What are you trying to accomplish? And have you been to each one of these different spots? And what's kind of the genesis behind the story?
Yeah. So it's basically adventure programming or no one's gone before. So we're not dealing with the what, where, how. It's more of the why. And we're trying to reframe survival stories and athletic achievements as catalysts for spiritual awakening. And in a nutshell, that's our executive positioning statement, as we're reframing survival stories and athletic achievements as catalysts for spiritual awakening. So we're trying to connect those dots, create some type of synergy, intersect those stories, because I think at the deepest level, we're spiritual beings that happen to be having a human experience. So if that's true, and I believe it is, then the real matter is what's happening in the realm that we can't see. So we do have episode one already done. It's called The True Summit. I've watched your film, which was fantastic. You won an Emmy Award, so congratulations for that. And we did a bunch of other awards with ours as well. So it was well received. And I think the thing about that particular film is we were trying to deal with all the guys that were climbing in the 21, 22, and 1924 expedition, where Mallory and Irvine, of course, disappeared into legend, into the clouds, if you will. But all those guys had one thing in common. And there's a fascinating book, if you haven't read it, it's called Into the Silence by Wade Davis. He spent 10 years writing it, and it's just unbelievable how he picked apart and peeled off this onion of all these guys had one thing in common. They were all World War I vets. They had all seen human carnage on a level that we can't even begin to comprehend. And for many of them, they were trying to find that silent space. For me, I would call it, in the first episode that we did on our trek to Everest Base Camp, I call it the place where the sun is always shining. Right? It's above the clouds. It doesn't matter what's happening in culture and your own circumstances, is that place that where the sun is always shining, and we're all looking for that. And we all want to live there, whether it's a dopamine hit or, a plaque on the wall. We want to live in that place where the sun is always shining. And there's just something about the human soul that I think is bent towards that. So we try to delve into that. What does trauma look like? What is, why did I live in my vehicle for 5 years? And then I had guys, some special ops guys, when we were on top of Mount Ararat in Turkey for 5 summers, looking for a big boat on top of a mountain with scientific technology to figure out, okay, what's the science saying here? We know what people are saying, but what is science saying? These special ops guys all said, "Man, dude, you got what we got." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" I thought they were talking about ARC fever. And he's like, "No, when you talk," this is real critical for the listener, I think, to understand. He says, "When you talk, you're always punishing your past, you're poisoning your present, and you're fearing your future, but you're never now. Like, you're just not here." And that perfectly described where I was at 10, 15 years ago. I just was not able to be present because the present hurt too much. I was either projecting into the future, punishing my past, beating up myself for regrets, things I couldn't fix. And then they said this, and this is something that's more optically available, is they said, "Yeah, when we look in your eyes, you have that same 2,000-yard vacuous stare that we all have." And these are all combat guys. So this is not, Stuart Smalley or the guy that did the mirror thing in the SNL series, right? Getting in touch with your inner child. These are warriors, man. The parts of their bodies are missing. I can't get some of them past 14,000 feet because half their calf is missing, or they've got, extensive nerve damage, and they're on so many medications that they can't, even deal with altitude and acclimate. So I listened to these guys, and they gave me some breadcrumbs, like, okay, it's trauma. That's the breadcrumb on the trail. Let's dig into that. Let's spend years in therapy and in community and contemplation and good content, something that's catalytic, something that'll awaken the dragon slowly. You don't want to awaken that thing overnight, but let's get into those places that are you're unable to access, and as a result, you're not able to access yourself. It all starts with yourself. It all starts with your identity, which is always spiritual. But if you're divorced from yourself, you're just divorced from everyone, right? You're not even bringing a whole person to the equation. So that began a multi-year quest. And as of late, now with the near-death experience that I briefly described, that if people are interested in that, there's a video online called The Day I Died, and that goes into the whole minutia of it. But then I began to think, well, what would it look like if we piggybacked on some big stories, Shackleton, right? And let's further dig into Mallory's story, and let's leverage their stories, because those are big stories. Kevin DeVries' story is not a really big deal, but those are stories that have been told for decades. They're part of, lore and legend. And let's find out what Shackleton encountered when he was crossing South Georgia that he was reticent to talk about, along with his two teammates, but they all said the same thing. when they're at the edge of life, at the edge of the unknown, at the end of themselves, after doing the journey that you described, 17 days in an open boat voyage, which still is the greatest open boat voyage of all times, 1,800 miles across the world's worst ocean, 30, 40, 60-foot waves that looked like mountains that they thought were mountains until the mountain fell on top of them. And then they sit there on this island and they're trying to figure out how do we cross this thing? It's 30 some odd miles over territory nobody has ever, gone over before. And as they're doing that, at the edge of their own capabilities, at the edge of life and death, they had this epiphany that they were not alone. And it's kind of an old story. If people are familiar with like Bible stories, you always had the three Hebrew boys in the fire, right? And then King Nebuchadnezzar says, "Hey, I thought we threw three guys in the fiery furnace. I'm seeing this fourth guy. Who is this person?" And so it kind of builds on these biblical narrative legends, stories, true stories, I believe, and it puts it at the forefront. So the guy that came out of the 9/11 tower, the last survivor of the South Tower, he came out, he did everything exact opposite of everybody else. Everybody in his floor and above died. He's the last person to get out of the South Tower alive on 9/11. And they said, "How did you know what to do?" And he's like, "Well, I just followed my guide." And they're like, "Well, we found you alone. You came out alone." And he's like, "You know, it's funny you say that." And all these people that are being rescued say the same thing. "The minute I heard human voices, this person, this presence, if you will, persona, disappeared." So there's something, I think, you probably had an encounter there and it's unexplainable. And, sometimes when you look back on the records, it just doesn't match up. There's no person, right? There's no corporeal person that would have been in that place. It has to be somebody from another dimension, a guardian angel or whomever. And I'm fascinated with that because I think people are hungry for knowledge of what is beyond, right? I'm one of the, I guess I'm an explorer in the truest sense of the word. I even went into the land of the dead, for 15 minutes. But I think people are fascinated with that, and it gives structure, it gives meaning, it gives context, gives a framework to their life of, okay, maybe I am a spiritual being having a human experience. And if that's true, then what does the spiritual look like?
So let me ask you this. So we're kind of going off all good about going on these super extreme adventures, and other people have gone. They're kind of going into the void, right? And discovering things about themselves. And there's a spiritual side to that because they're at the edge. And when they're at the edge, things get, at least for me, became super flipping clear, right?
Yeah.
Just what was the most important thing? I mean, crystal clear. I wasn't daydreaming about whatever. So I want to go back to Shackleton again and going down to South Georgia. Now it sounds like you've just filmed one of your four episodes.
Correct.
Are you aspiring to go to South Georgia and go to the South Pole? Is that what's on the,
Yes.
you've done the research, you've done it all, but now in order to complete this project, you're fundraising and you're doing other things that would actually get you these additional series that would wrap up this whole thing called The Journey Within.
Yeah. So episode two will be called The Naked Soul, and that will be going to South Georgia actually because the journey is longer now. We weren't able to even do it this past November because the ship lost propulsion. So we're going back and we're doing a true Shackleton voyage where we'll be able to see Elephant Island, Deception Bay, the place, in the Weddell Sea where his ship actually sank. So we're going to be able to get a full journey. And then the next part would be episode three, which would be going to the South Pole. And essentially, starting from the same place that he turned around in 1908, where he realized, "Hey, I've got enough food to get to, the South Pole. We don't have enough to get back." So he did kind of the opposite of what his mentor Scott did, and said, "Look, guys," and he actually wrote his wife. I love this line. It sounds Churchillian, but he said, "I," writing to his wife, he said, "I thought you would prefer a live donkey than a dead lion." I love that line. It's just so good. It's so British, right? And it captures the whole idea of, okay, we'll live another day. And so he showed incredible fortitude and leadership ability, right? Most of us would have just been like, we'll just figure it out. And he's like, "No, guys, I mean, they got within 97 miles of glory." He still was knighted, but then of course Edmondson did it a few years later. So I want to kind of get into that space of what does that great silence look like? Because that's really the thing that you're dealing with is repetition and silence in Antarctica, which is essentially a massive desert, as you know. What does that look like? How does God speak? How do you get quiet enough where you can hear voices other than yourself? Because we're so inundated, we're part of the same generation. Mindfulness is not really a word for us. We grew up being mindful. We didn't have digital devices constantly invading our private space. We had hours of just looking at, condensation dripping or swinging from a tree branch. So we're trying to get into that space of how do you get away? How do you digitally detox? How do you get in that space where you can hear another voice, a voice that can guide your future? What does that look like? What does it sound like? So we're juxtaposing the silence of Antarctica as a spiritual journey. And then the final and fourth episode would be bookending it, going back to Everest, doing what you did, going all the way to the top, and then digging into again the idea that, okay, what is the summit? Well, the true summit, or searching for the summit in your case, it has to be something bigger than a geographic place. It has to be actually a space. And if that's true, and it goes in line with what you're talking about, is finding your own Everest, then anybody can climb Everest, right? Because it's a space, it's not a place, and it's a spiritual place. And it's a place where I think you have nothing to prove to the world because you've already proved to yourself that you don't have to do this. There's a sense of tension there. It's almost Buddhist that way. It's kind of Sherpa. It's this tension of being in the moment, being present, and trusting the results, doing your best, and then leaving the results to the universe and letting it speak for yourself, but not have your identity attached to those achievements. That's the tricky part, is not being identified by your achievements, but by your spiritual awareness. Much easier said than done. Much
Yeah,
easier said.
and especially for, I'm certainly a goal setting guy, right? And
You're type
but
A, man. You're at the top of your game. You're an NFL athlete. You won the lottery, man. I mean,
yeah, but at the same time, what you're saying is true, which is, I can honestly say that, the goal is the goal. And I didn't, I on in 2017, the goal was to go climb Denali, and I got turned back, and I got turned back by the elements of Mother Nature. And that's just the
Yeah, right
way,
along that way.
and that's just the way it played. And so, the bitch about that, and it sounds like you've been up there, is that you're dragging 137 pounds behind your back, in a sled. And it is tough going to get up to 14,000 feet, steep hills, lots of crevasses, brutal weather. I went up there in early May, and it was just tough, tough, tough. And so it was more the disappointment, not that I didn't make the summit, is that I was gonna have to go back and go through all this all over again, right? And knowing the
Nobody
pain
wants
that
it.
I had to go through. Yeah, I mean, it was awful. And so, but again, that's also what, back in my NFL days, the goal was always to win the Rose Bowl or win the national championship. And we did, and we came close, and we did all those things. But at the end of the day, there's wins and losses and how you come back. And just like I think what we're talking about, the valleys, the resilience, the grit, the determination of what you need to do, that if you didn't make your certain goal, to reset that goal and then go on Mount Everest. My goal, I was supposed to go in 2020. And so the whole world shut down, of course, because of COVID. So everything got pushed out. And so now for me to keep my motivation up and keep going and keep grinding and keep going after that disappointment of I've been working so hard for this goal, and now, this disease took it away. I set the goal to climb not just Mount Everest, but also Lhotse, all kind of the same, trajectory there, right? And at the end of the day, when I was coming down, I told you about that angel that I ran into. I looked down there, and as looking straight across at Lhotse, which is the fourth highest mountain in the world, I knew if I tried that, I would die. I was already at the edge there if I did that as well. So in that sense, I failed, right? But again, what it's the ultimate prize. It was the journey. It's what I learned. It's what I didn't even know I had inside myself, even though I thought it was pretty gritty before, and what it was going to take for actually survive. And I haven't even talked about I spent the entire night with no oxygen in 26.5 when once I came down. So the fact that I'm even sitting here having the same conversation, with you today is a miracle, and I'm very blessed to be around, to have all that. I will say, if you're looking for another shipmate, trek mate, you know where to find that guy sitting on the other side of the screen
You'd
right
be a
now.
good
But
you'd be a good guy to be in a pinch. Yeah, it's kind of like Ed Bistra said, getting up is summiting is optional, but getting down is not. And I've always said for years that the ascent and the summit will teach you what you can do, but the descent or the valley experiences you keep alluding to in life actually teaches you who you are. There's just
one of
something
the things.
deeper valley experiences. And so what we're trying to do with this docuseries is really, as we go up, it's all juxtaposing. We're trying to It's John Muir stuff. He always said that when he went out, he was actually going in, and that the mountains are actually inside you. You don't go into the mountains are already inside you. And so we're trying to take people on these physical journeys that most people will never do, right? For a variety of reasons. And then as they're viewing, we want, as we go out and go far and go up, we want the viewer to go deep and we want them to go in. And I think we'll be successful with it. The first episode was well received, and yeah, I think we're onto something. It's blue ocean territory. It hasn't been covered before from this angle, and so I'm excited about it.
Love that, love that. Where can people find you to get more information, whether you want to contribute to this film project or just get in touch with you?
Yeah, probably the best place, just go to Kevin at truesummit.llc or just truesummit.llc. All of our contact info in there is. This thing is so brand new. We just created the trailer that I sent to you a couple days ago, like 2 weeks ago. So we don't even have a designated web page. But if they hit that website, I'd be happy to send them info. And yeah, we're looking for financial partners. We're looking for distribution and streaming platforms. So we're kind of doing three things at once here. It's not just the physical part, which is training and getting your head in that proper space, but it's, yeah, this is, it's aggressive. We're creating a series that people can binge watch, and that takes a lot of time to create that much content.
No, it's just incredible. And the stories that you're trying to tell with the explorers from the past,
Yeah.
and you're talking about climbing and being in silence, and a lot of that is just a necessary, I wouldn't call it evil, but necessary things, is because people are split between, and there's so much energy that's going out, and the resilience that these different people had. I mean, it all plays into overcoming adversity and finding their way, which is all about finding your summit,
Exactly.
and which is all metaphorical. Okay. Listen, Kevin, you're an inspiration. I love what you're doing. I was really blown away when you sent me all this content. It was just like, I need to have this guy on the podcast. You're an inspiration in terms of really having a goal and wanting to go achieve that, following through the process. Competitive greatness is really about just the process and loving it and how people did it and trying to figure it out. And that's what you're in the process of doing. So thank you for that.
Thank you. And I appreciate what you're doing, man. I feel like you're a like-minded king. Let's go to war together.
Let's do it. All right. Listen, again, if anybody wants to go and get a free PDF download of What's Your Everest, everybody's got their own Everest, go to my new website, www.markpattisonnfl.com. I will send that to you for free. All right. That's all you got to do. Kevin, on that note, thank you so much. There he
Thank
is, the
you.
one, the only, Kevin the Explorer. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.